And their argument goes like this, and I'm summing up, you know, quite a bit of information, and so is he. Madison here is summing up that your faculties, God gives you, he created the world and put you in it. But life just doesn't continue on its own. You have to do things to maintain your life. And your life is given to you. You didn't evolve out of the primordial stew or anything. It was given to you, and life is defined, the boundaries of who you are, mentally, emotionally, and physically. You're made in the image of God. That is your possession. Your faculties, such as your mind and your energy and your will, are also now, God gave you those rights and your faculties so you could go out into the world and you have the free choice of the objects on which to employ them. Your labor. You're to eat by the sweat of your brow, unfortunately, as a result of the fall. But you still have to go out and labor. And this is also, so in other words, you have the free choice. You have the liberty to go and work and labor upon objects. And so your faculties are an extension of your property. And you have a free right to exercise them. So property, life, and liberty. Starting to sound familiar? These concepts were embodied. And the federal government threw their weight behind these rights. This is what defines rights. And this was peculiar to American culture. In a word, he sums, as a man is said to have a right to his property, he may equally said to have property in his rights. The two are fungible. They're interchangeable. Rights come from property, and property come from rights. I mean, the two are synonymous, virtually. However, he goes one step further, and he says, conscience is the most sacred of all property. Your conscience is a possession that God has given you. Now, why does Madison, in summing up the view of the American founding and basically summing up over 300 years of the development of this concept of property, where did it come from? So not only do you have a property in your physical possessions, you also have a property in the possession of your person and the free exercise to use those things. But most importantly, he says, conscience is the most sacred of all. And no one, if it's your possession, then no one else has dominion over it. And thus, no one can tell you, including God gave you freedom of conscience. God's not going to force you to believe. He didn't force Adam and Eve to believe anything. He gave them boundaries. He gave them the boundaries of their conscience, but he didn't force them. Allah, on the other hand, is capricious. He deceives for fun. He can't be trusted. He's never given a promise or a covenant that he's kept. Nothing. He's never even given any promises or covenants to keep. And he forces you. He says, you know, you must submit. That's the meaning of Islam, is submission. There is no freedom. There is no property rights in Islam, which is just curious. I wonder how they're going to get to this whole thing of freedom and democracy and respecting individual rights, because you can't get there. Their basic worldview, their culture is antithetical to this. And you can't impose something from above when there's a basic worldview that is so antithetical or contradictory to it. You can't get to it. And even their imams over there are saying, this is so incompatible. You can't just introduce, you can't impose democracy. It's not going to work. It's not Allah's will. And it is. So, but all these things are a gift from God. And thus, since they don't proceed from man, our laws are based on protecting these in the sense that no one, even the government, cannot intrude upon this. We can diagram this by saying we have the property of our person. The property of our person, our body, this includes all of our faculties, our intellectual and emotional, as well as what extends. It's our external property, that which is all the stuff that we own. But more precious than any of them, what's most sacred, is our conscience. And nobody can invade these without committing a crime. I can't come in and take your external property without due process. I can't come in and just take your stuff. It's called burglary or robbery or theft. I can't attack the property of your person. This is a property right. We can call them person's crimes, but they're really a property crime. And no one can force you legally, ethically, to compromise your conscience. Here, everything outside the boundaries of your property is not yours. And everything within your boundaries, in the boundaries, is yours, both conscience, your person, and your physical property. And just I illustrate this to show you the language of is and is not. And I want you to keep in mind, especially, not the physical sense of property as we continue through this, But these other properties that belong to you, and especially your conscience, as defined by this language. Okay, we see this. This is the first article of the 1776 Virginia Declaration of Rights. This was penned by Jefferson. That all men are by nature, and when they say by nature, they're not intending nature out here, but what comes by nature. In other words, you were born this way. God gave it to you. They're equally free and independent. Each person is equal in this sense that he is free and independent to use his property, what is his by possession. You have the liberty to do that. And they have certain inherent rights. It comes with it. It comes with the possession. Of which, when they enter into a state of society, they cannot, by any compact, deprive or divest of their posterity. Namely, the enjoyment of life and liberty. Life is a gift from God, and life includes those things that we just discussed. Your body and your faculties and your conscience. And liberty, thus, is tied to that concept. Liberty today is an empty word. It does not mean what they meant it here. It had a very specific and a rather narrow idea connected with property. Liberty today means I can do anything I want. No one can tell me what to do. It's actually freedom from conscience, not liberty within the confines of your conscience, and that I can exercise my convictions according to the way I see fit. With the means of acquiring and possessing property. So God has given you the means. I've got two good hands and a mind, and I can go out there and I can acquire and possess physical properties to meet my needs. Because my body, the gift that I have, needs maintenance. And thus, I have freedom to go out and work and keep the fruits of my labor. Keeping the fruits of one's labor was a very recurring theme. In addition to property, the fruits of one's labor. So it's you have property and the fruits of what you exercise. And pursuing and obtaining happiness and safety. Happiness is an unfortunate word that is now kind of, again, lost its meaning. In that pursuing and obtaining happiness and safety just means I get to take care of the needs of life. That's not to go out there and be hedonistic. That's not what they meant by it. And notice that you have a right to pursue it. You don't have a right to happiness. You have a right to pursue it. In the founder's view, you had a right to property and the free exercise thereof, but you don't have to use it. And if you were lazy and slothful and incompetent and didn't do it right, you didn't get happiness and safety. You were a bum. But you don't have a right to happiness and safety, but you have a right to pursue it and to be left alone to do so. So then I don't even have to tell you what these words are from, but then it's embodied here in our Constitution. We hold these truths to be self-evident. It's so obvious on the face of it that it is self-evident, it's prima facie, that all men are created equal. And here I think Jefferson was dragged a little more his critics accuse him of being a deist, and he certainly was. And I think he would have moved more in a humanist tradition if he had not had men like Adams and Madison and Washington around him to pull him in a little more. Because now this was set, this is almost the same words as in the Virginia Bill of Rights as it is in the Constitution here. So now we have a little bit different language. That all men are created equal. And when he says equal, he means equal in two ways. It was their understanding. Of course not everybody's created equal. We're not all the same height, width, intelligence, abilities. All these things are different. That's not what they meant, that where men are created equal. We're not even created equal in the sense of the sexes. What they mean by equal is two simple things, that we're all made in the image of God. Okay, so that's kind of a good thing. But on the other side, since the fall, we're all born into sin. So we're made in his image, but we're also sinners by birth. And that's why we had to have a separation of powers, because if you had a collection of power to one person or group, then they will violate the property rights of others. That's why we had a separation of government, of powers in the government. That they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights. You cannot be divested of those rights. That among these rights are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. These are all... Again, the word property isn't mentioned here, but it's embodied. It's based on this whole concept. Without the concept of property, these words wouldn't even be here. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men. This is their definition of good government. This is the only reason that government exists, it's a collective right to protect property. We each have individual rights. If I came up to you, Steve, and said, you know, I think I'm just going to punch you in the nose. And you go, I don't think so. And you defended yourself. You have a right to defend your property. come up and I say, I think I'm hungry. I'm going to take your wallet and I'm going to go buy some lunch and some groceries. No, that's my property, and you have a right to defend it. It's not a crime to defend your property. Government is merely the force of law, and law is the collective use of force to protect the individual's right to property. And then that government derives their just powers from the consent of the government. One more quote here from the era, 1795. This is a U.S. Supreme Court decision. The right of acquiring and possessing property and having it protected is one of the natural, inherent, and unalienable rights of man. No man would become a member of the community in which he could not enjoy the fruits of his honest labor and industry. Certainly, if I was an honest laborer or applied my faculties and my property, and I couldn't enjoy the fruits of that labor and industry, why would I be a member of that community, at least willingly? If you're not, you're a slave. The preservation of property, then, is the primary object of the social compact. This is all born out of the idea that the God of the Bible gives men life, and with it, the liberty to exercise your faculties and a conscience, which is more important than anything else. It's the most sacred. This was the worldview, the defining concept, a biblical worldview that saw rights, individual rights, vested in the individual. And government was set up, and culture, the culture around it, supported that. The institution of the family. You can't have the propagation of culture except for the family, because if there's no people to reproduce and have more people, there's no culture that's propagated. So the family is the first and foremost unit in culture and in society, is it not? And then you pass on your norms and your values to the next generation. And then in the institutions, either reinforce or destroy what's done in the home. So this thing that we call culture, this ubiquitous thing that you can't put your hands on and you can't put it in a test tube and measure, nevertheless constitutes something that we find ourselves in and we grow up in and we adopt, for better or for worse, those things that start off in the family and that are reinforced or not in the institutions of that culture. School, work, government, the media, the arts, and those kind of things. That is a brief sketch of American culture, at least the way it was. What has changed? There's another worldview. There's really only two worldviews. One is dialectic and one is didactic. You may have heard that before. So now let's trace the thinking, at least, that leads up to what our culture is today and how the worldview has changed. I'll get ahead of myself a little bit here and tell you up front that it is basically Marxist in its worldview. And what that means, it's a dialectical, materialistic worldview. Now, the only reason I use the word Marxist is because it is Marxist, but it's kind of unfortunate because it's just not confined to Marx. I mean, it predates him, but we use him, at least I do, as a benchmark because he did certain things with these ideas that are with us today and that are antithetical to traditional American culture. So, to do so, we have to learn a new language, basically. And I can't teach you that whole language here today, but I'll give you some of the buzzwords so then we can discuss those, because, again, there's that word, the propedeutic word. You have to have a body of knowledge before you can get to this other level. When you talk about Marxism, what he did was he used the language of philosophy to hide his agenda. So he speaks in this philosophical language that if you're not schooled in it, you just kind of go, what in the world is he talking about? Marx discovered from his comparative study of political constitutions that social and political structures are dependent upon property relations. Oh, does this sound familiar? American founding was based on property relations. And what he was studying here was the English social political economists of that era, like Adam Smith and Ricardo and these guys, which they, by 1776, Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations became the classic textbook, basically, on capitalist economics. 1776, Adam Smith built his theory of capitalism based on property and property relationships at the same time that America was coming together and making a government based on that philosophy. That basic idea. Well, Marx studies this, and he realizes that all social and political structures are dependent upon this idea of property and property relations. and that there is a hierarchical relationship, and that these things are a gift from God. And to change the social and political structures, you must change property relations.